My favorite thing to do is talk to you. Listening to how your life has been impacted and how you have grown in your organizational journey is so inspiring. Over the years, I have really internalized for myself and verbalized to you that perfect is not a thing. It does not exist. I have replaced the word perfect in my vocabulary with the word excellent. I am not a perfectionist. I am a person of excellence. I invite you to come to share your story about how you are being transformed from a reactive to a proactive person, from an overwhelmed homeowner to one who is now in more control of your time and your spaces. We all want to hear what more grace feels like in your life with your unique circumstances. Do not wait until you are a perfectly organized person. Remember, perfect does not exist. I want to hear from you. Please sign up to join me for a Wednesday podcast interview at organize365.com/Wednesday. As I already alluded to, these next three Wednesday podcast episodes are going to be a little bit different. They're not really a Friday podcast where there's something actionable coming out of them, and they're definitely not an interview with somebody in the community that has achieved organization or is on their organizational journey and bringing you along. They're more kind of like just really long coffee chats, I guess. And also, kind of, I want to mark this moment in time. So Organize 365 is going to be 12 years old in January. And in those last 12 years, a lot has happened, and you've been along for like 9 years of that ride on the podcast, but I want to go back to before Organize 365 in this podcast. What was my life like before I started Organize 365, and specifically the 7 years leading up to Organize 365? I mean, if you're new to the podcast or to Organize 365, you may have heard me mention my story about how Organize 365 got started. But today, I really want to dive down into how bad it was. Like, it's so hard when you followed a company for a while or you find a company after they have kind of found their product market fit and what they're uniquely created to do, which I feel like Organize 365 has to, you know, at least the extent that we are now, we will continue to grow. But I definitely am a much, much different person today than I was 12 years ago. I would say 8 or 9 years ago was really who I am today. But the years before that was a completely different person. And I want to let myself go back there so that you can realize how far I have come and how similar to your situation I was in. So, January 2012 is when I started Organize 365, and December of 2011 was when I quit my teaching job. And right now, you're with me in the car. We are traveling to Indiana for the last event for the teacher pilot that I'm doing, which I will share information for that with you in the next podcast. So 12 years ago, I was driving to work and I was just at a loss. I was at a loss for what to do basically with my life. I was 39 years old. And going to be turning 40 in March. My kids were 9 and 10 years old at the time. So they were getting ready to go into middle school. I was teaching middle school in a Montessori school. And I fully believe that God had me teach in that Montessori school for 18 months so that I would understand middle schoolers better. So I would be a better mother to my own children as they went through middle school and high school. I mean, I was a trained preschool elementary teacher up until that point, and like, I was a great stay-at-home mom. I mean, we had thematic days. Like, I was on all of the field trips. Like, I did all the things when my kids were little. And grade school, I understood grade school as well. But being able to teach in middle school really helped me to see how children change in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And some happen in 6th grade. Some don't happen until 8th grade. But 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, there is a cognitive shift in children that I observed. A social shift, and just they kind of like become the person that they're going to be as an adult. They start to think differently than their parents. They start to explore different things. It is really, really, really fun to observe. And having been a Montessori teacher, we had so much flexibility in how we taught, what we taught, when we taught it, when we would take little rabbit trails. And my teacher, my co-teacher was just amazing. Like, she was so seasoned and just so good at instructing in general and so intuitive with the kids. And I mean, she, if they wanted to learn about something, I mean, we were off and running. She's also diagnosed ADHD, which was part of why I got the job, was because the administrator wanted me to organize the cabinets in that room, the closet in that room, which I did. But I learned so much. I mean, in that 18 months that I was teaching with that co-teacher, I learned so much about life. I became a so much more generous and even keeled person. When I started that job in fall of 2010, I was opinionated, self-righteous. I thought I knew all the answers. I really had lived in my own little bubble for so long, you know, from one suburb to the next, from one white experience to the next. You know, I really had not had a lot of diversity in my life. I had some. And I was, I mean, I've always been a person that could talk to multiple age groups. And the school I was in was not like ethnically diverse, but my mental environment that I had always been had been one religion, one political affiliation, one worldview. And I bought into it hook, line, and sinker. I mean, I'm a good girl. I, as my sister said, I made no waves. Like, she was so ticked when she became a teenager because, like, I had broken zero rules. She's like, you didn't break any water for me. Like you were so good and you didn't, like, challenge anything that basically I had to do what a first child should have done. I was like, I don't know what to tell you. So that experience for me really helped me to be more understanding, compassionate, and accepting of different worldviews, ideologies, everything than myself, because the way that that co-teacher had us have morning meeting, we had this thing in Montessori, which is called morning meeting. And you sit there in the morning, we had like this riser system built into our school. So you'd sit on this really nice riser system. And we would just talk about like the events of the day. And sometimes morning meeting would last an hour or 90 minutes. And I'm like, we've got a math lesson to do. And my co-teacher's like, the math can wait. I'm like, okay. And as I started to realize that she wasn't going to change and we were going to have a 60 to 90 minute morning meeting whenever the students wanted to, I started to allow that and say, okay, well, the time's going to pass anyway. Then I will really invest myself in these conversations. One of the, there were two conversations that we had that really stick out to me. So this was the 2010-2011 timeframe. One was the tsunami that happened in Japan that impacted the nuclear facility there. And we discussed that in the morning meeting, probably for 6 weeks straight, every single day. And the kids ended up doing research on nuclear reactors and just a whole bunch of stuff. It's very, very interesting. It's just very interesting how they troubleshooted that, how they did research, what they wanted to talk about, the environmental impact, the societal impact, the world impact. It was really neat to see 6th, 7th, and 8th graders thinking really at an adult level and being given the freedom and the time to do that. The second thing that happened in that same time frame was the earthquake in Haiti. And the earthquake in Haiti basically took out the government because the governmental buildings collapsed and a lot of the government leaders died in that tragedy. But what was interesting was there was a family that was adopting, and there was another family that had a family member who was an ambassador. And the ambassador came into our school and talked about, you know, what an ambassador does and things like that. That was fascinating. But when it came to adoption, because my children are adopted and I have friends who have internationally adopted, I know some things about international adoption. And what happens is an international adoption is a government-to-government exchange. So it's not just one family in one country can relinquish a child to another family in another country. It must go through the governmental channels. And so the governments have to sign off. And so when that happened, if you were adopting a child in Haiti, you could not finish your adoption because the person who signed off on the adoption had passed away, and the person who would do it in place of that had passed away, and it was just chaos. And so there were these children in the process of being adopted that could not finish being adopted. And so we kind of were able to follow that story and how some state senators, there were quite a few Pennsylvania children that were in this. So the state senators in Pennsylvania went to the national senators in Washington, D.C., which then were able to make it so these children could be adopted. So anyway, all that to say is I loved my teaching experience. I loved what I was doing. I felt like I was making an impact. I was definitely being impacted. So let's go a little bit further back. So we're going to go 19 years ago. 19 years ago, we're in 2004, 2005 timeframe. 2004, the fall of 2004 through January 2005, and I didn't put this in my calendar, so I'm not 100% sure, but I'm fairly certain it was January 2005 when my mother left my father. Could have been 2006, but I'm pretty sure it's 2005. So we were up there for Christmas. Christmas seemed a little, you know, contentious, but whatever. I was busy chasing two little kids. Like, my kids were 3 and 4, 4 and 5, or, you know, the details I don't know exactly. And then we found out in January my mother had left my father, which then led to a 2-year separation and a War of the Roses divorce. It was horrible. It was horrible for so many reasons. I mean, nobody wants their parents to get divorced. But also, I was 4 hours away, so I couldn't really do anything. Not that I could do anything. I was the kid, obviously. And I had lived in Cincinnati at that point for about 10 years. And I was established in my motherhood. My children were leaving preschool and entering into kindergarten, you know, first grade in the next couple of years during that divorce period. So I was busy. But also, I've told this story before. I don't know what podcast episodes, but I've mentioned it a couple of times. In the summer of 2005, I had my first, what I will call, out-of-body experience. And by that, I mean, I was standing in the kitchen. It was a Saturday morning. I don't know how early it was. Sometimes between 10 and 11. It was before lunchtime. Kids are about, you know, 4 or 5 years old. And I remember screaming, and with this high-pitched, like, ranting voice, I do not remember what I said. I remember flailing my arms, and my bracelet hit this, I had a Pandora bracelet, and it hit this whiteboard that I used for the kids and created all these dents in there. And I literally just, I mean, when people say they lost their mind, like, that's what I picture. Like, I was not in my own body. It was almost like I was above myself looking down going, you've got to get this together. Like, what are you doing? And Greg was standing there with the children, and I don't remember the look on his face because I don't remember it, but he said, okay, we're leaving. And he got the children and he went in the car and he did not come back until, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 o'clock at night. I still to this day do not know where they went or what they did, but he just left. So I was like, okay, great. Well, now your children and your husband are gone, so you don't have that stress, but why are you losing it? So I made myself a sweet tea and some pretzels, and I put myself in timeout on my bed, and I got my planner and my physical planner, because it was 2005, and I started flipping through it, because in the past, when I felt out of control, I would look to my time on my calendar to see what had caused this feeling. And when I flip through the book, I'm like, I don't see anything out of the ordinary. I don't see anything out of the ordinary. And there were a bunch of school appointments and doctor's appointments, but I mean, I was always in school appointments and doctor's appointments for my kids, so that wasn't out of the ordinary. And then the thought occurred to me, yes, it may not be out of the ordinary now, but how many of these have you done in the last 12 months? And I was like, interesting question. So I counted them up, and it was 110. Doctors and school appointments for my children. That's crazy. That's a number that'll make you a little So to put this in perspective, Abby just got a job at the high school that she attended. I'm bringing you to present day now. This happened in our kitchen yesterday. So she's starting school. She's starting a job at the school where she attended school. She didn't attend all 4 years, but she was there for 18 months, okay? In our school district, there are two high schools. There's an east and there's a west. The one that she attended is the one that she has the job for. We had a 15-minute debate in our kitchen last night where my husband insisted that the school that she is now teaching at is not the school that she attended, that she attended the other school. And Abby and I are looking at him and saying, she attended the school that she's working at. He's like, nope, she attended the other one. I remember driving there for a Nutcracker performance. Or like, well, first of all, she did not do the Nutcracker in high school. She did that in grade school. And also, that was at this school that she is now teaching at. No. I remember being in the parking lot. To which I said, you do realize there was no busing when she went to school. So I drove her to school every single day for 18 months of school. So a year and a half of school. And I have never driven to that other school at all. He's like, nope, I'm pretty sure you guys are wrong. To which I looked at him, I said, who's the kid's doctor? And he just looked at me because he knows the doctor's name, but he has never taken our children to the doctor before. Now, back to 2005. I went to 110 school and doctor appointments. I remember requesting the Greg leave work and come to the first IEP meeting for Joey in 2004 or 2005, whichever year it was. I think it was 2004, where they were going to determine if he was going to get an IEP, because I'd read all the books and I talked to all the teachers and like, you need to have a unified presence and the husband and wife need to be there, the mom and the dad, and the school will take the dad more seriously, so you bring the dad. So I was like, bring the dad. Brought the dad. I can't even tell you. I can't even count how many IEP meetings I've been to. That is the only one Greg has ever attended. He never attended any for Abby. I've done them all. So, 2005, summer of 2005, 110 school and doctor's appointments. Now, I remember before I became a middle school teacher, thought I could solve things, thought I had all the answers. So I thought when my kids were little and we adopted them that if I just provided, you know, bought everything financial money could buy and spent all my time with them, that I could overcome any limitations in their biology. Are you done laughing yet? I think all parents do this. I'm so grateful that Dr. Barkley, who is a renowned ADHD doctor, has a TikTok channel. He has a TikTok channel. And on his TikTok channel, he now has this little TikTok that he shares where he says, you parents have got to knock it off, basically. I'm paraphrasing. Parents have got to knock it off. You are not God. Like, you cannot change these things. All you can do is provide the best environment possible. Your child is your child. And my kids are great. Like, my kids are great. But as a parent, you always want to remove any roadblocks you can and smooth out any bumps that you can. Like, you want to make their experience the best that you can. Another thing that I know now in my 50s with grown children is that what we label behaviors or, I guess, deficiencies at the age of 4 is different than 6, is different than 8, is different than 10, is different than 22, is different than 42. Like, You can't always get all the answers when you want all the answers. And the diagnosis changes because as children get older, you're able to see what that adult diagnosis will be. So children diagnoses are not always what end up being adult diagnoses. But I didn't know that back then. So I would say that 2004, 2005, when I was trying to orchestrate the world through my own hands and my parents' marriage had fallen apart, I really had to step into full adulthood. I was in my early 30s. And by that, I meant that in the past, I would just call and talk to my mom forever about whatever was going on. But I had to navigate all of that without calling and talking to my mom about it because she was going through her own stuff, you know, like as moms do once they're, you know, just in general, as people do, they go through their own stuff. Well, after the divorce, my father got sick. He was sick for about a year. And my sister and I were power of healthcare and power of attorney. And then eventually he passed away and we're the executors of the estate. I've gone into this in length as well. So driving home, I think I went home 7 times in that 9 months that he was sick. And then we settled the estate and then we had to sell our family home. And remember, our parents are divorced now. And so, you know, that is what it is. It's not great. And there were other things that were not great. Like it was not a great estate to need to settle. There were multiple lawyers. And like, just to put it in perspective, there was a trust. Like normally you would put your stuff in a trust and then it makes the execution of the estate easier. Unless your trustee of your estate and your successor trustee of your estate resign the day you die. I mean, can you write this stuff? It's not great. So multiple lawyers, it was just bad. So 2004, 2005, I'm trying to you know, do whatever with my children. My parents get divorced. My dad gets sick. Then I do the estate. The only silver lining, I guess, my father passed away in May of 2009, was that when we sold the family home, my sister and I did get the proceeds from the home. So we did get some finances, which was great because 2007, 2008, like we were so broke. Greg and I were so broke. We had, I don't know, done everything we could to do everything we could for our kids. And so we had maxed out all of our credit cards and everything. So when my father passed away, we were able to pay those off. And I knew that we would go right into that back same situation because the school that we had Joey in was so expensive and the needs that Abby had were so great financially that all of this money from the inheritance would go away very quickly. And I was fine with that. Greg is fine with that. Like, we wanted to spend our money on our kids and on their education. I took some money and we redid our kitchen. One of the things my mom and dad have done in all of their houses, and like my dad did it at the country club we belong to, like they love to renovate things. And I was like, how, and I still to this day love my kitchen. And I do think about my dad often when I'm in my kitchen because he loved to design things. My mom and dad loved to design things and build things. So I redid the kitchen. I was able to really go back into that pink bubble of pretending I was a stay-at-home mom because I had a little bit of money from my father passing in order for me to pretend that I didn't really need to earn an income for our children. So financially, I'm just going to back up a little bit. Financially, I was a teacher and I left the teaching profession before we adopted our children. One, because I don't know. Somebody said, if you stop teaching, you won't be stressed and you get pregnant. That didn't materialize, but, you know, that was one thought. And the other thing was, I was really good at selling Creative Memories direct sales scrapbooking supplies. And I had replaced my teacher's salary with the scrapbooking, and I did want to be a stay-at-home mom. So I said to Greg, hey, I already replaced my teacher's salary, and just because we don't have the baby doesn't mean I don't want to be a stay-at-home housewife. He's like, okay. Because Greg always says okay to everything I want. It's like, okay, great. So when my kids were little, like in that 2004, 2005 timeframe when I was going to 110 doctor's appointments, I was making good money, more than I did teaching as a Creative Memories consultant. And I didn't have daycare. Like there were a lot of fees I didn't have because I was working around my own hours. Well, in 2007, Creative Memories went bankrupt the first time or sold. I don't remember the timeline exactly. It was like 2007. Then they were sold again in 2009. But so by the time you got to 2010, even though I was kind of like back in that stay-at-home mom mindset, because I had this false inflation with this little bit of money from my father, I didn't have the supporting income behind me to backfill. So when that money ran out, there wasn't going to be any more money. So that leads you to, I need to get a job. So I'd started, you know, doing some little things here and there on the side, but I couldn't really find another direct sales company to sink my teeth into and grow. And we were running out of money. We were running out of everything. So, and I was teaching part-time, like just computer classes at this Montessori school in 2009 in the spring of 2010, which is when I realized I really needed to get a job. And so I did. I got a job and moved into that middle school position, went to school that summer of 2010 and got my Montessori certification and then taught in 2010, fall of 2010. In 2010 is also when I went on antidepressants. I do have a podcast. I think it's podcast 69 is about my depression story. You can rabbit trail over there if you want to hear about that. I was just on them for, I think, about 6 months. I took myself off of them in the fall of 2010 once I got this job. So I loved, as I told you at the beginning, I loved teaching middle school. I loved everything I was doing. But my kids' needs at that time were not getting less. They were getting more. And those 110 doctor's appointments that I had gone to in 2004, 2005, were less, but not by much. And we still had a lot of physical medical needs, and we had a lot of IEP needs. Joey was at Springer School and Center. And in the fall of 2011, even though I had gone back to teaching, there just wasn't enough money. Like, there just wasn't enough money to keep Joey in that school. And there wasn't enough of my time to really be the mom that I wanted to be. And at this point, it wasn't to be able to go on the field trip. It was to be able to do their homework with them at night, to be able to really figure out what was going on at school. Just, I don't know. The kids just really, really needed me because they just had a lot of extra needs. So here we are, December 2011, 12 years ago. And I am trying to spin all of the plates. And I don't even recognize myself. I'm so grateful that Greg's and my marriage has remained so strong throughout the years. They've definitely been harder years than others. I'd say 2020 was a difficult year. But anyways, I don't think anybody would say 2020 wasn't a difficult year. There have been some years, but for the most part, our marriage has remained strong and never in question. Financially, I mean, we do fine. For some reason, like when I sit down and I, for years and years and years, and I do the math on the budget, like this is going to be our budget, and then I look at how much Greg and I make, the two numbers don't equate. We need more than we have. But yet, for some reason, all of our needs have always been met. And so I'm so grateful for that. But as a human, in 2011, December 2011, I felt like if I was giving myself a grade on a report card, I was getting Fs on everything, in my marriage, in my parenting, in my homemaking, in everything, except teaching. I was doing great at teaching. And I think, you know, I hear from a lot of people that you're organized at work, but you're not organized at home. And then people say, oh, you're so organized. You have so many things going on. You're like, oh, if you could just see my house, and I don't feel that way. And I just, that's how I felt. Like I was organized at work, but literally everything felt like it was falling apart around me, like just completely falling apart around me. And then I was called in the day before winter break, Thursday, to stay late for a meeting. And my daughter was really sick, but I was out of vacation days and I couldn't not go to this meeting. Greg was out of vacation days, so he took time unpaid to take care of our daughter, and I went to this parent-teacher meeting that was called. And this was a parent-teacher meeting that did not need to be called. It didn't. It just did not need to be called. Well, I went through the meeting, but what happened after is the reason why I quit my teaching job. So afterwards, my administrator asked me to stay and talk with her. And I was like, I need to get home to my very, very sick child. And she was like, we really have to talk now. And I'm like, fine. I mean, like, I can't say no. So I sat there and I felt like a kindergartner who had been called into the principal's office who was being lectured to, which was exactly what was happening. And I was told that I was a bad teacher and that if I did not change my ways, you know, like, I don't know what was going to happen, but whatever. I was lectured to like I was a kindergartner. So driving home that night in the rain, in the dark, you know, like a country song, I was like, what am I doing with my life? What am I doing with my life? I was so grateful for that teaching job and the steady paycheck. And I was so grateful for what I had learned from my co-teacher and the more accepting and compassionate person that I had become with a wider worldview. I feel all of those things happen. However, at what expense for my family? Because while our marriage was, you know, we were married and we weren't talking about getting divorced, it wasn't like I was giving Greg any attention whatsoever. Like, he knew my name and we lived in the same house. But I mean, like, we hadn't been on a date. We hadn't had a conversation that wasn't about who was picking up what kid where. Like, he wasn't getting any of me. My kids were not getting what they needed from me. Like, I want to be the one that picks up my kid when they're sick. I want to be the one. I don't care that I went to 109 of the 110 doctor's appointments alone. I love that. Like, I want that. I am the good advocate for my kids. Like, that's what I want to do. I have no problem that that's how my time was being spent. I don't resent my husband for that at all. Like, if he said, I'm going to go to some of these meetings and you don't need to, I'd be like, no, you're not. I'm going to all the meetings. Like, I want to go to all the meetings. So I was not doing for my children what I wanted to do as their mother. And my house was just, I mean, a train wreck, you guys. I know you don't believe me, but it totally was. So I'm driving home and I'm like, well, if my administrator doesn't think I'm doing a good job teaching, and on my self-graded report card, that's the only thing I'm not failing at, and you're now basically telling me I'm failing at that, Well, then I'm getting rid of that and I'm going to make all these other things A's. Like mentally, that's what I did. I was like, that's it. I'm done with this and I'm focusing on my home. And, you know, money is so important. You need money. However, I love to live my life with no regrets. That's why I did 110 doctor's appointments. There's probably not an intervention that you can mention to me that I didn't at least research, if not do with one or both of my children. Like I've done it all because I did not want to have any regrets. And my husband is 100% aligned with that. If we find something that has even a potential of a possibility of improving something for our children or now our grandchild, we say yes. And that is why Greg and I have lived in the same house and we drive cars for 10 years and we take one vacation to the beach each summer. Like we're finally in our 50s. Greg's 56. I'm 51, going to be 52. We're finally going to travel to Europe. Like we just have not done any of those kinds of expenses because all of our money has gone to our children and now our grandchild. And that is the way we want it. Like Greg and I are 100% aligned on that. No regrets. So as I'm driving home, I'm like, I'm going to have regrets. I am going to have regrets if I keep doing a job that I think I'm doing well, that I'm not appreciated for. Like when I was appreciated for it, I was going to keep going and I was going to live with the consequences on the family side. But if I wasn't appreciated for it, well then fine, I know how to make money. I will make money somehow. I'll replace this teaching salary. And that's where I was. In January of 2012, I did. I resigned the next day. By the middle of January, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to make money. And in 2012, I had 9 Schedule Cs on my tax return, which means that I legitimately made income 9 different ways that I had to report to the IRS on my taxes. I cleaned houses. I tutored. I did 5 different direct sales companies. I started Organized 365, where I did in-home professional organization. I made custom scrapbooks for people. I mean, I did everything I could. And within 6 months, I had replaced my teaching salary. If you want to hear the whole story of 2012, that book is called Organization is a Learnable Skill. We will be doing a book club for that in January. And that is my 2012 month by month, what I did, how I felt about it. It was written in 2021. So it was, you know, I didn't do a diary, but it's pretty accurate. I'm just going to say it's pretty accurate. So that's 2012. So the reason why I'm recording this podcast today is because I'm just about to pull up here to the school. And back in 2012, I thought that I would replace my teaching salary like I had before I had my children, and I would be a stay-at-home mom. And that was my only intention with Organized 365. I started it as a blog because I had a blog in 2009, 2010. I understood what bloggers were doing. I thought I could earn some passive income on the side if I did it as a blog and I wouldn't, you know, need to trade time for dollars and I could grow something online. But I had no idea what it would be. I didn't even know I was a professional organizer at that time. I picked Organize 365 as the name of my company because I knew it would be good for SEO ranking in search engines. I decided that whatever I did for the rest of my life, because I was turning 40, would somehow involve organization. In January, when I sat down and I thought about what I wanted to do, I looked back at everything I had done successfully, from creative memories and teaching and tutoring and all of the things that I had done. The common thread was organization. I either got the job or kept the job or was successful because I was organized or I helped someone else become organized. Organization was the thing that made me who I was at the age of 40. And so Organized 365 was I could talk about organization 365 days a year for the rest of my life and never tire of it. That's how I picked it. What could I do for the rest of my life and really pour all of my energy into, having no idea what it would become? And know that I would not get tired of talking about that thing, about doing that thing, about investing myself in that. You know, I come from a long line of entrepreneurs. I'm a fourth generation female college graduate. My great-grandmother, grandmother, mother, and I all have college degrees. And every single one of those women started from scratch, their own companies, their own businesses. and were entrepreneurs. My mother sold hers, and, you know, it's how they earned income. And so being a, none of us went to school for business. My mom has an art degree. My grandmother has a home economics degree. My great-grandmother has a teaching degree. But I come to find out that was the only degree offered to my great-grandmother. The only college degree you could get then was a teaching degree. So that's why she got a teaching degree. She wasn't a teacher. She owned a restaurant. She owned a gift shop. She owned a floral shop. There just were different rules for what women could do. Basically, the women in my mom's family, you may have rules. We don't realize there are those rules. So we're just like playing by our own playbook. Like, it's kind of funny. We just, like, when people tell me, like, there are these limitations, these different things, I'm like, oh, there are? Like, I just don't even see them. I don't even realize I'm supposed to have some of these limitations that people have brought to my awareness. So I just do my thing. So organizing. I decided that I would do organizing. And quickly, within 3 months, I found out that I was a professional organizer and people would pay to have me come and organize their house. And by the end of 2012, I was so happy with my little blog and organizing people's houses. I had well replaced and exceeded my teaching salary. And I just thought I would be an in-home professional organizer with a blog for the rest of my life. But that's not the case. When you really dive into what you are uniquely created to do, which organization is what I'm uniquely created to do, and you put all your time and effort into that, the goal moves further and further out. Your impact gets bigger and bigger. And what you're uniquely gifted and created to do becomes different and more expansive and something that you could have never even imagined. And that's where I am as I'm driving. I've told this story in the past, and I feel the feelings of anxiety and stress from how I felt in 2011. And I can't even manufacture those feelings anymore, because now if I hadn't had that experience, I would have never started Organize 365. And I'm so excited to see these teachers in the next hour that I can't even feel those negative feelings anymore. To be driving the week before winter break to a school where all of the teachers in that school have been offered the opportunity to organize their schoolwork in the education workbox. And then they're about to get the surprise that I'm going to deliver. Like, I can't even believe that I have the privilege of being able to do this. So that's what I'll be sharing with you in the next podcast. When I leave from here, I'm going to tell you all about it. So I'll see you guys next week.